Professor Dion Foster. He's a professor at Freie University Amsterdam and also the University of Stellenbosch. Good morning and welcome.
Anton, so great to chat to you, my friends. It's been a joy to listen to you over the last week, streaming here in Amsterdam. Makes me feel like I'm home again.
Oh, wonderful. So what are we chatting about today?
So, Anton, yesterday was a very special day because it connected my two worlds, the Netherlands and South Africa. The 15th of April is the day on which we remember the birth of and also actually the death, remarkably, of a very special Christian woman named Corrie ten Boom. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of the name Corrie ten Boom.
I have.
But she was a truly remarkable woman. She was born in the Netherlands in 1892. And together with her family, she lived in Haarlem, which is not too far from where I am here in Amsterdam. And during the rise of National Socialism, so the rise of the Nazis, her and her family really took their faith very, very seriously. And they were instrumental in hiding and helping Jews. I read somewhere yesterday that in total they saved the lives of about 800 Jewish persons, and that thousands of descendants of those Jews are alive today because they saved them. Now, what struck me about that, Anton, is, you know, certainly during their time, the rise of this sort of political evil in society was becoming more and more evident. People were feeling uncomfortable with the way in which they were seeing Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists exercising a kind of violent, exclusive, othering power in the world. And, you know, the Netherlands at that stage wasn't that far from Germany. In fact, we know, for example, that the king at that time was actually a sympathizer with National Socialism. But Corrie ten Boom and her family really clung on to Romans chapter 12, verse 21, which says, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Now, I think this is one of the lessons that that strikes me from her life, Anton, is that Christian discipleship, I think, for us is not only about believing the right things. And of course, we have to figure out what is true and right. We need to study the scriptures. We need to live within the tradition of our faith and believe what is right. But equally important is that being a Christian is about doing the faithful Christ-like things. It's about living that kind of life. Now, what's very sad, last week we spoke about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, this week about Corrie ten Boom, was that in February 1944, she and her family were betrayed by a member of their community for hiding people. And so Corrie and her sister Betsy and their elderly father Casper were sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp. And, you know, that's a very sad story. And she writes later in her life about that. Her sister Betsy passed away and so did her father. But even in that place, even in that small place, they held a prayer meeting. Yesterday I was reading that one of the things they did was, you know, initially they found that their beds were completely infested with fleas. And then they suddenly realized that, you know, the reason why the guards were leaving them alone, why they could have their prayer meeting and care for others, was because their place in which they were living was so infested with fleas. So Corrie ten Boom says, you know, even in the darkest moments, we can find something to thank God for. That small little thing became for them an act of light. Another wonderful aspect of Corrie ten Boom's story was many, many years later, after, you know, the liberation of Ravensbrück, she started a ministry of reconciliation, going around, you know, really saying that we need to find ways to forgive those who have wronged us and live a better life. And she was speaking at a church, I think it was in Munich, when one of her old prison guards came to her. And he said he's been so moved by her message and he's so repentant for what he had done. And he reached out his hand to try and shake her hand. And she said she felt within herself, you know, could she actually forgive this man? And in that moment, she suddenly realized this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where the test of my faith comes. And she says, as she took the man's hand, she felt not only forgiveness for him, but also the reality of Christ's forgiveness and love for her. So I was really inspired by Corrie ten Boom's life. And, I realized that for most of us, we are not in prison. We're not facing the kind of challenges that she faced. But Anton, isn't it remarkable to see someone, a disciple like this, who in the most difficult times was willing to say, what is it that Christ wants me to do? The ordinary little things, the stretching out of a hand, the finding of something to give thanks for, even in the midst of difficulty and suffering, and always living and speaking and acting for truth. So maybe that's an inspiration to one of our listeners today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, it's easy. Talk is cheap, as they say. So it's very easy for us where we are now to, look at these things and think and know that they are amazing. But what happens when we are in those situations ourselves? Will we still do what we are in our hearts convinced of? Will we still remain true? That's a whole different question. It's easy to say that, no, I'm sure I will, and I will do that, and I would have done the same. But wait until you are in that same situation. I mean, they hid Jewish people behind a false wall, and they called it, the hiding place for about 2 years. Yeah. 2 years that they did that.
Remarkable.
And then, as you said, eventually a Dutch informant betrayed them. But eventually she traveled to more than, I read up on her. She traveled to more than 60 countries eventually, preaching forgiveness, hope, and faithfulness. And there was also a best-selling memoir called The Hiding Place that was released in 1971, and then eventually a film in 1971.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just to say, if anybody's coming to the Netherlands, her home is the home where she and her sister and her father lived is a little museum. Mm. And together with the Anne Frank Museum that is here in Amsterdam, these are places to go. And you can draw so much inspiration from that. Anton, the one thing that strikes me is that, we often look at these people, as you say, and we think, how amazing, they did such great things. They must be great people. They started out just like us, like you and me, in a conversation where someone starts saying something untrue about someone and they speak up and say, no, we can't do that. That's where it starts. It's the little things that build towards the greatness. And I'm really challenged by that to say, in the quiet place at the beginning of the day, my quiet time, I'm going to decide to live righteously, to act in the ways in which Jesus would act. And then when it comes to the meeting or to that difficult moment, I've already decided how to act, and it just comes a little more easily.
Mm. Something also wonderful is, as you mentioned, the flea-infested barracks that they had to stay in. The guards refused to enter those barracks, and it was actually almost the kind of a blessing, because then they could have Bible study inside, because the guards didn't want to come inside because of the flea-infested place. But yes.
Now, I've often wondered, I have a feeling, Anton, when we get to heaven and we get to look back on our lives and we say, I've often been through things and wondered, why on earth did I need to experience that? Why did that thing go wrong that I thought would go so right? One day I think we're going to look back and say, aha, I can see what the Lord was doing. It all fits into place. And what I need now is just that ability to say, Lord, I trust you. I trust your work. I trust your ways. I give myself over to you. If you can change it, as Jesus said in the Garden of Gethsemane, would you take this cup from me? But not my will, but yours be done.
Yeah. Just by the way, the home that you spoke about in the Netherlands, is that the actual home where she hid the Jewish people?
I believe it's their home where they lived in Haarlem, so that's been turned into a museum, a monument. And the Anne Frank House, I mean, that one is particularly well done at Westerkerk, which is not far from where we live in Amsterdam. It's really a remarkable experience. Just to warn anyone, if you are traveling through the Netherlands and want to visit one of these museums, they tend to fill up about 2 months in advance. So book online before you come, so you're not disappointed.
Great. Thank you so much, Professor Foster. It was interesting and great to chat to you. And, of course, next week, same time, same place. Great.
Thanks, Anton. Bless you, my friend.
Take care, you too. Bye.